We're still in the middle of discussing Cain and Hevel's story. We got through Pasuk Beis last week. I guess just to recap last week what we discussed the birth of Cain and Hevel, when it occurred. We had one opinion was it occurred in Gan Eden. One said it was after left Gan Eden. The name of Cain and Hevel has a lot of symbolism in terms of, number one, the idea of creating a child as a partnership with Hashem. But that was what Rashi explained about Cain's name. And then we saw the Rabbeinu Bechaya, and we'll see many others agree to this, that Cain and Hevel represent their character. Cain is somebody who was interested in kinyanim, being koneh, to have acquisitions. He was focused on this world. Hevel said, this world is Hevel. This world is nothingness. He's focused on Olam Haba. He spoke about their professions. Now, Cain was a farmer, and Hevel was a shepherd. And how the idea of a farmer, he's working on the cursed land that was cursed, you know, in the Klal of Adam Rishon. It says, Arura Adama, the ground is cursed. And Hevel worked in sheep, which had to do with the new world that we're in, of clothing, the idea of wool being clothing. So we have that connection between Cain and Hevel as well in terms of profession. And we also learn Rabbeinu Bechaya, who said that the profession of being a shepherd is the profession of many tzaddikim in the Torah and in Tanakh, because being a shepherd allows you to have time to reflect and also distances you from the different challenges of city life. So those are the two ideas of being a shepherd. So let's go to number 13, we'll the next pasuk. Next two pasukim, actually. V'hime ketz yamim, it's on page 2, number, source 13. V'hime ketz yamim, v'yave kaim pri ha'adama, mincha l'Hashem. So it was after an amount of days, we don't know how many, and Cain brought from the fruits of the land an offering to Hashem. V'hevel hevi gam hu mi'choro sono michel vehen. And Hevel brought from the first of his flocks and from their choicest fats. Visha Hashem el Hevel ben Chason. Hashem turned towards Hevel and towards Hevel's offering. And we'll see in the next pasuk he rejected Cain and Cain's offering. So this is when they decided to bring this carbon. And this is where the dispute between Hevel really came out into the forefront. That's in pasuk Gimel, pasuk Dalet. So before we look at the idea of the carbon, there's a few different Pirushim who argue about when this actually occurred. I mean, it says Miketz Yamim, so we don't know when that was. So we're going to see some Mefarshim discuss when that was. And even before that, number 14 discusses the general idea of a Karban. This is the first time you find the entire Chumash anybody bringing a Karban. This is the initial Karban in the entire Torah. So the Ramban says in source 14, V'yave Kayim pri ha'adam mincha l'Hashem. Kayim brought of the fruits of the land an offering to Hashem. V'hevel hevi gam hu, and Hevel also brought. Hevinu anashim ha'ila. These people understood, sod gadol me'ar karbanos. Now the great secret of karbanos, v'amanachos, and of manachos, of different offerings to Hashem. So they picked up on this idea of karbanos. The first ones ever pick up on karbanos, at least in the psukim. Happens to be the Gemara says that Adam HaRishon also brought a karban. We don't have any reference to that in the Torah itself. In the Torah, the first ones to pick up on it were Cain and Hevel. And Bechein Noach. Noach also brought a karban. Rabbi Senu Amru, this is why I just quoted, Shigam Adam HaRishon Hikriv Shor Par. And the rabbis say that Adam HaRishon also brought a karban. V'zeh Yachson Piha Mavhilim B'tama Karbanos. And this comes to close the mouths of those who are, you know, too quick at explaining what karbanos are all about and they get it wrong. I'll explain what that means in a second. And I will talk more about this later on. So Ramban doesn't say much over here, but he says something very important. What I believe he's doing here is coming to argue with the Rambam. The Rambam is famous. He says that the reason for karbanos is purely in order to fight against the Avodah Zarah. And he says that there's a practice of Avodah Zarah to bring karbanos. And a lot of the Torah was trying to wean us away from Avodah Zarah. This is Rambam's theory he has throughout Moreh Nevuchim. He says a lot of mitzvahs are based on Avodah Zarah. So he says, therefore, even though karbanos may not be an ideal, since we were so accustomed to them when we did Avodah Zarah, Hashem had to allow them the Torah as kind of a concession to us to wean us away from Avodah Zarah and bring us into Avodah Hashem. So that's the Rambam says that about a lot of mitzvahs. The kasha on that Rambam really, this is one of the big kasha on that Rambam, which is that Cain and Hevel weren't doing Avodah Zarah. Adam HaRishon didn't do Avodah Zarah. Neither did Noach. These were not people who were of the Avodah Zarah. They didn't need to be weaned away from it. And they still brought Karbanos. So we see a karban is not purely about being weaned off of Avodah Zarah because it wasn't relevant here, and they were still bringing karbanos to Hashem, and it was considered a good thing.
So get close to Hashem.
So that we'll talk about other reasons, right? Yeah.
If they were the first ones to do it, do we assume that Hashem told them to do it?
No, that didn't say that. They just picked up on it. As the Ramban says, hey Vinu, they understood the idea of karbanos. You know, it was like they had an intuition, it was the right thing to do. This is a good question. So the question is then, what is the Sod HaKarbanos? What's the purpose of a karban? So for that, there's a lot. This is not our discussion today per se. There's a lot of discussion on that. Just a few quick points. The idea of a karban is to bring closer to Hashem. That seems to be clear. The word karban is from karev, karov, come close. That's the idea. Rishonim explained, number one idea of a karban is that you're supposed to see yourself on the Mizbeach, meaning that I also may deserve to be killed based on the averus I've done, and therefore instead I will vicariously live through this karban. It's virtual reality, you know, that karban should have been me. That's what the Ramban says later on in Chumash. That certainly makes sense about a chatas. If you bring a karban because of a sin, then you understand that's kind of in your place, you know, instead of me, take the karban. But not every karban's for a sin. You know, you have an ola, you have a shlamim, and those are more just to approach Hashem and come closer. So that's not because I have to vicariously be killed through the karban. So there's an idea also that karbanos are to give of ourselves, like literally we call it a sacrifice in English. Because I'm sacrificing of my possessions for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's considered a very powerful thing, because I'm willing to give up something for Hashem. It was done through animals, it could be done through money, it could be done through time and energy also. You know, there's other ways. We look at a tainus as also a karban, because I've given of my flesh to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I fasted all day and I probably burned some fat. So that fat's also going for Hashem. It's also considered as if I brought a karban.
Yeah, Yom Kippur, they do the
Trumasi,
the
Chaparasi. Yeah, it's in my place, correct. It's the same idea, yeah. Very similar idea.
So I guess I'm just very westernized in this regard.
Yeah.
Because I understand money, I understand sacrifice, I understand a lot of different things, but it's just very, very hard to
for an animal
understand killing another living being.
Living being,
and
right.
That being a way to get close to Hashem.
Right.
I mean, I understand that I don't understand it all for sure.
Right.
But it's just very, very hard to.
I mean, definitely in our Western state of mind, it is foreign to us. On the other hand, you know, do you eat meat? I assume you eat meat. Are you vegetarian?
Yes, I do.
You eat meat.
100%. So. And I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I have to, when I'm cleaning a lot of chicken, I have a hard time.
You sense that also.
I really have a hard time eating
right.
it after. But I'm like, no, this is, I eat chicken, I'm not going to become a vegetarian. Like,
right.
But yes, yeah, I hear that.
Right. I mean, there also was a point that, you know, when we talk about, let's say, the Ramban's example of something else, you know, being in my place, you don't get that same sense through money or through time or energy. When it's a living being slaughtered in my place, it really gives you that feeling, gives you that sense. Hadam hu anefesh, you know.
I totally understand.
There is that,
that
point. It's still hard to kill an animal.
No, yeah. I understand that 100%.
Right.
That stronger than for sure money, but I guess in my mind that the imprint that it would put on my mind, on my soul, would be never to do that sin again, because I don't want to repeat that.
Well, that's probably the goal. That's true. So, but you achieved your goal.
Yeah.
So that was good. That was a very good thing. But yeah, the thing, there's a lot more discussed about karbanos in general. That's not the focus of our shiur now. But just the Ramban saying that Kain Hevel picked up that there was something about a karban that's essentially good to do. Mm-hmm. It's not just about, you know, casting off of Avodah Zarah, but there's actually real proactive good reasons for bringing a karban. So they're the first. This is the first karban recorded in the Chumash. So now we want to know, when did they bring this karban? So look at source 15. This is, again, the Chumash itself leaves it vague. Miketz Yamim, after a man of days. So I have three sources here as to when it occurred. The significance of each one is not so clear to me, but we can talk through it. First one's at number 15. This is the Targum Yonason. And Targum Yonason says, V'havim is Sof Yomaya u'b'arbasar b'nisan. Targum Yonason's an Aramaic, it's one of the Aramaic translations of the Torah. He says it was after a amount of days on the 14th of Nisan. What day is that?
Pesach.
Erev Pesach. V'aisi kain mi'ibad ara mizdara kutna. This is when Kayan brought from the produce of the land. He brought flax for Hashem. So according to Targum Yonason, it happened on the 14th of Nisan. Why is that significant? So Erev Pesach obviously is a very significant day. Seemingly from this, we see the Erev Pesach had significance long before Yetzias Mitzrayim. in our minds, Erev Pesach is important because that was the day before Hashem freed us. And that night, because it was Makas Bechoros, the first Seder, and we would slaughter our Karban Pesach on that day. But we see that day was designated from the start as a day of serving Hashem. Because even Kain and Hevel kind of picked up on the fact that this is the day we should bring Karbanos. So I'm not sure exactly why, but we do understand in general that it's not the event that causes the day, but the days themselves have power. Like we discussed at length, you know, last year, we talked about the months. There's an essential meaning to each day, regardless of the event which occurred. The event's just expressing the day. It's not that the event makes the day. So the day of Yudal Nisan is a day of serving Hashem in its essence. And then with that, they picked up on that and brought their kabbalas on that day. So that's Targum Yonason. The next source is interesting. It's the Chizkuni. And he says, this is number 16. He says, Mikitz Yomim Shenoldu. So he says it is the amount of days after they were born. Shana Tamima, an entire year, Nikris Yomim, is called Yomim. So the word Yomim, even though it's a vague term, days, that refers to a whole year. Al-Shem Shekol Ha-Yomim Chozrim L'Sidram, because since, in terms of the calendar, the days come back around again. So we look at the calendar as kind of circular. That every, like we spoke about also last year, that every single time you hit a day or a month, you're re-experiencing that same month. Kevat Chila, Be'arucha V'Ktsara. So it goes back to as it was, for long cycles and short cycles, but the idea being, he says it's a year. So one says Yidal and Nisan, and one says a year. And Rabbeinu Bechaya says something else. In number 17, Mincha Lashem, HaMincha Zos Hesav B'Yom Chamishim Labrias Olam. It was the 50th day after creation. So if we are, there's actually a machlokas, the Gemara, when the world was created. So we're familiar with it being Rosh Hashanah. If you were to do that math, so you're talking about somewhere in the middle of Cheshvan, I guess. About Cheshvan, something like that. The other opinion in the Gemara is the world was created on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So if you're going with that, you're talking about somewhere in the middle of Iyar. You know, one of those two. But 50th, so the 50th day from Brias Olam, Ben L'Divri Rabbi Azar, Ben L'Divri Rabbi Yeshua, whether you go with the opinion that's created in Tishrei, or the thing that was created in Nisan. V'chein darshu chazal v'breishis rabbah, and this is a medrash you find in Breishis Rabbah, etc. I'm going to skip that. Look down to the next paragraph. So then it says, U'mashik piru shnei chacham ma'elu al chamishim yom. The fact that they both say it's 50 days, yatzavanu tam l'mashin stavinu b'tor l'akriv mincha b'yom atzeres. Now we can understand more about Shavuos, he says. The Shavuos is 50 days following Pesach. Right, so there's the idea of 50 days has significance. Keneged kayin vehevel shekrivu mincha b'yom chamishim. So he says our karbon on Shavuos, which is the 50th day, actually corresponds to kayin and hevel who brought karbonos the 50th day. Kimitoch osa hamincha tisbar amitis hanavua, because what they brought is a very significant karbon. Because as we'll see in the next few psukim, through the mincha, the offering of kayin and hevel, we clarify the truth of Nevuah, because we're going to find Hashem speaking to Kayin and Kayin responding to Hashem. So we see Nevuah as something which comes in this world and is true. Fushakasu v'yomer Hashem al Kayin, that's when Hashem speaks to Kayin. Tisbar hashkacha, we learn from this hashkacha because Hashem came in and he saw what was happening, he intervened and then punished Kayin. Gam onesh v'aschar akol nichlo Hashem, also the punishment and reward. Hashem rewarded Hevel and punished Kayin. So this karban actually led to the first display of many of the great yisodos of Yiddishkeit. You know, the idea of nevuah and schar ve'onesh, that occurred in this karban. Now I was wondering, I mean, we do see this about Adam Rishon as well. Adam Rishon spoke with Hashem. Adam was punished. But I think you can't compare the world of Gan Eden to our current world. I mean, Cain and Havel were doing this in the current world. Gan Eden was a whole different existence. So the first time you find in our present world that Hashem spoke to a human being, and there's Hashkacha and Schar V'Onesh, even after the Chet of Adam, that's by Kain and Hevel. So that's such an important event. Rabbeinu Chaya says that our Karbanos we bring on Shavuos are marking that event. It's kind of, even though it wasn't the same day, being this the 50th day after, it's like a Zechir, so it happened with Kain and Hevel. And there is some correlation, because on Shavuos we do bring the Shtei Lechem, which is produce of the ground. It was a bread Karban. And we also bring an extra karban shlamim, which I guess could connect maybe to Hevel's karban of the flocks. So there is some connection. Ultimately, we're trying. The idea of 50 is the main connection. The fact is, the 50th day after Pesach, let's remiss this karban. It's an interesting take by Rabbeinu Bachaya. So we have three opinions really when this occurred. It was either a full year after they were born, which by the way means that they're 1 year old and they're doing this because they were born as adults. It seems. They weren't born as babies in Gan Eden. So however they were born, I don't really understand it. But they're 1 year old according to that. According to Rabbeinu Bachaya, it was 50 days after the creation of the world, which means they were even younger than a year, right? And then according to Targum Yonasan, it was on Yadal and Nisan, and we don't know which year exactly, but Yadal and Nisan. Those are our three opinions. So let's look now at number 18. This is a piece from the Kli Yakar. And he discusses this idea of Ketz Yamim, this ambiguous term. They brought the karban after an amount of days passed. But he actually takes it more, we'll call it, al derech musar. I mean, what he says here, it's hard to say what he's saying is actually the pshat in the pasuk, but he draws a lesson from it. And it's a very powerful lesson we can all gain from. So I want to do this piece, even though it's not exactly relevant to the pshat in the pasuk. He says, Kvar noda shekol ave kinyan hamamun. We know that all people who love money, you know, those people who love their material possessions, lolam enosim shum mitzvah tzedaka min mamonam kol chayehem. You know, they're very, very stingy, and they don't do mitzvahs with their money or give tzedaka, you know, during their lifetimes. Because they say, you know, there's a lot of time left in my life, and I want to use my money myself. I don't want to lose out my money. Lechol lesova, I can eat and be satiated. Lestashmum, I can use my money. I'm going to save it up to buy myself a nicer car, a nicer house, and better food. As long as they see themselves as strong and healthy, with a long life ahead, they still act very stingy with their money, don't use it on mitzvos. And they don't see themselves declining anyway. They don't give any of their own personal wealth for the service of Hashem. Who else should enjoy this besides me? That's their feeling. So this idea that I want to keep everything for myself because I got plenty I need to do with my life. I have a whole list of things I want to accomplish, and I have things I want to buy, and I want to enjoy my good food and good drinks. So they hold on to their money. But at a certain point in life, reality hits. Ach miketz yemei cheldom. You know, as their time on this earth starts to come to a close. They see themselves approaching, you know, their final days. And everybody knows that you don't take your money into the grave. So suddenly they get this big religious burst. You know, I want to use my money now and get stucca and the mitzvah's better. So they bring what we would call their mincha l'Hashem. You know, they're bringing their offering to Hashem, similar to Kain and Hevel. Hein derech karban, hein litanan liyam, whether it be a karban for real, whether it be giving tzedakah, with derech acher or some other way, v'zeu ha-malve l'ani v'shas dochko, like giving a loan to an ani when he needs it, v'somer dochko al shal malve, sh'esha dochakto l'asos, which is bar l'kaman, or if there's a creditor who's oppressing somebody, you can help that guy pay his debts off. So basically, you know, people might be stingy their whole lifetime, but as they see the clock is ticking, so suddenly they start getting these feelings, I better do good with my money fast because I'm not taking it to the grave. What am I going to do with it? Suddenly they get very religious and they become big Baal Tzedaka and they use it on all these mitzvos. But even then, they're not trained to be generous people. You know, if you live a lifetime being a stingy person and then you know your last few years in this world, suddenly you want to start giving, it's not natural to you. You're not a giver. No, you're a taker. The af gam zos b'yosu karav l'sharei mamas inu nosin l'shei mitzvah. So even at that point, because they're not really trained in being generous, they still give minimally. You know, if someone who never gave their whole life is not going to give $25,000 to the shul, because the whole life they're pitching pennies. So he only gives like the worst portions for mitzvos. And the best stuff he leaves for himself. Because he doesn't want to take from his choicest possessions. So, and he is very stingy with his own property to give to Nais Takosh Baruch Hu. So he's describing a reality of many people in this world that they're not balei tzedakah, they're not givers, and therefore, when it comes time, they really do need to give, and they recognize that they're not going anywhere with their lives. You know, their lives are coming to a close. They still don't really give properly. Now, I always say that being giving is it's a mitzvah you have to build up. You know, there's an idea that, I'm sure, I've probably started here before also, but you know, the Rambam says, a very famous idea, the Rambam says, "Kol fi rov ha-maisa," everything goes according to the abundance of your deeds. So the Rambam says, all things considered, it's better to give $1 if it's stuck 1,000 times, $1,000 at one time. So why is that? Because if you give $1,000 at one time, it's a beautiful donation. So you did the act of giving, but you're not becoming a giving person. If you give $1 1,000 times, you're training yourself to be a giver. So you've changed yourself. So all things considered, you have to, you know, figure out who needs the money and when it's needed. You know, it's not everything's in a perfect world. But for yourself, your own personal growth, the more you do a mitzvah, even though it might be a lesser amount, the more it changes you and trains you to be a more giving person. So to have this person, their whole lives, they're holding all their money back and they're stingy, gave nothing. So suddenly they want to start giving, but they don't have that, they haven't built up those muscles. And so you have giving muscles in you. You know, the more you give tzedakah, the more those muscles are built up. You become more of a giver. But if you haven't built those muscles up, so then every time you give a dollar, it's painful. You know, you want to give away your money, you just can't. It's mine. I can't give my money away. And even though you know it's foolish because this person's at the end of their life and they're not going to take it with them into the grave, even so, they can't really give as they should. So this remez, again, I don't think the shot in the pasuk. We don't know the kind of heaven where we're getting old and giving away their money. But there's a remez in it. Because it says, miketz yamim, you know, as the days came to a close, Kayim brought mipri ha'adamah. He brought of, you know, the most inferior of his produce. Because suddenly he saw, oh, it's kids, I better hurry up and give. I have to give to Hashem now. He didn't give his best stuff, he only gave his inferior quality stuff. Chay nemar b'kayin, shayam min kitos elu. Therefore it says about Kayin, he was one of these types of people. As we already said before, Kayin was known for his love of olam hazeh, his materialism. He was to want his possessions and his money. So he was one of these types of people. He wasn't a big tzedakah giver, you know, because he loved his own money. He was materialistic. Vayimi ketz yamim. So it says ketz yamim as a remez. I know ketz yamei cheldo, the end of the days on this earth. Obasofa mamish. Either it's mamish, the end of his days, meaning maybe he really was approaching the end of his life. Ozechira sofam. Or he's remembered the day of death. I mean, it could be he was a young, healthy fellow, but you think about the day of death, you start getting nervous and wanting to do a little bit more for yourself, to give. And the Gemara says that one tool to fight the Yitzhahara, it says, Yizkor Yom HaMisa, is to remember the day of death. It's brought down as like a, you know, as one of the last things you should try, because it's not healthy always thinking about dying. It's not a healthy thing to do. And the Gemara gives about four different tools to use against Yitzhahara, and the last one is remember the day of death. So I think the idea is if you're always thinking about death, and then you get depressed, and it's hard to live that way. But if all else fails, the Zahara is really, you know, causing you issues. Sometimes you think about what's going to happen after 120 years. That scares you a little bit and puts you into line. So here too, it says, when you zakhiras, if you remember that end, that also will inspire you to give a little bit. If you don't feel that there's ever an end, if Kayin didn't think about the end, he wouldn't bring anything for Hashem. He wouldn't have given anything away because he's stingy. He's focused on his own possessions. Can we see that even his own personal recollection of the day of death only inspired him to give just the most inferior of his produce? So he didn't do any major things when he gave his karban to Hashem. I'm going to skip down a little bit to the last five lines of this piece. V'zeh kavanas ha-medrash. And this is what the medrash means. Ha-omer mashal shel kayin le'evet she'achol es ha-bechoros. So medrash says there's a mashal. The kayin was like a servant who ate all of the finest fruits, v'shagal melch siofos, and then gave the king the lousy fruits. Rotzeh lomar she'bachruso dahayinu ha-yamim ha-yamim ha-rishonim. Hashem mishpat ha-bechora ve'aroshi ozoch ha-mono kechol shirim tzor bekochos. This is the nimshol is the following. The bechoros means in his days of his youth. When he was younger, then he ate all of the things for himself. V'shorga melech mako she'olam baruch ho'siofos. He only gave to the king his final days in this planet. Hainu sofi mecheldo. Those final days, those days he sent up to the king when his strength was kind of leaving him, he was deteriorating, he then gave to Hashem at that point something. So it's an important muster for us to realize that you can't, like, there's no, you're cramming for the final exam, you know, at the end of our lives. We have to live our lives as good, generous, upstanding people. And then overall, we have that good record. But to say that we're going to scramble at the last moments to be able to give and do tzedakah and do the right things, it doesn't work that way. It is to be said, there is an idea of yesh kol olam sha'achas. You can do tshuva in a moment. The tshuva works in a moment. But we can't rely upon that. And ultimately, you have to be living as a generous person and not scramble at the final moments to start being a giver. So the kliyakrasi is at least a remez in the story of Cain. That, you know, Cain was inspired to give only based on his recollection of death, but not based on his own personal, you know, his own personal drive to be a giver. And therefore, he only gave very little. He gave his inferior quality things, and Hashem rejected it because it wasn't given with the proper, you know, kavod for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No, it was given, here, Hashem, have some of my leftover stuff. Well, that's not what Hashem wants out of us. So that's the remnants of kleocracies in this. If you look at number 19, so now you know, so what did they give? So the pasuk says that Cain gave me pri hadama from the fruits of the earth, and Hevel gave bechoro sono mechalbehen, the first of his flocks and their fats. So what are the fruits of the earth that Cain gave? And what's very important is it says mi pri hadama. When you have a mem there, you know, from the fruits of the earth. So that means he didn't give the best stuff. He gave of his stuff. I mean, he reserved the best stuff for himself, and he gave of his stuff for Hashem. That's what the mem is there for. If he gave better stuff, it would have said without the mem, he gave fruits of the earth. Not of the fruits of the earth. The word mem, that itself suggests he gave something very inferior. So Rashi says, min ha-garua. He gave of the lousy stuff. Some say that he gave to Hashem flax seeds. I don't know much about flax, but, you know, flax is usually regarded as like a cheaper type fabric. I don't know what you do with a flax seed necessarily. It's not really edible. It's a funny thing to give as a carbon, a flax seed. So some say he gave flax seeds as a carbon. Devar acher, mipriya me'eza shebal yado. Some say mipri means whatever he grabbed, lo tova lo mufcher, meaning he didn't choose dafka, the bad stuff. He didn't put time into the good stuff either. He just said, okay, he grabbed a little bit of his storehouse and threw them in his veach. So he didn't choose the worst stuff per se, but he put no thought or any special time into this mitzvah. And that was one of those two things. So, but definitely he didn't give of his finest, and that was a problem. So that's how the Rashi explains it. Chizkuni says a similar thing, but gives a little more detail. Number 20, he says mimosar maichalo. He gave of his leftover foods. So he sat down for a meal. You know, he had some of his grapes, he had some apples, and he had some corn, and then there was a little leftover, so he threw that in his be'ach. Right? That's the mi pri adam of the fruits of the earth. So of what was there, whatever was left, he gave. Vayhi miketz yom v'yavo kain l'achar zman. Kan pirsh Rashi, zera pishton hevi. And Rashi says he brought flax. Therefore Hashem didn't pay any attention to Cain's offering, because it was leftovers. He didn't want any leftovers. You know, you serve the kids leftovers again. Like, you know, you give a Kosh Baruch Hu leftovers. And also it came from the cursed ground. We know the ground was cursed. So he goes to the ground that Hashem cursed, and he gives of the cursed fruits to Hashem. That's not a very good karbon. So that was Cain. So Cain's issue, I mean, it all started, as we said, because he was materialistic. He was selfish. He's focused on Olam Hazeh. So for him, he didn't want to give of his own stuff to Hashem. This is my stuff. This is my possessions, my hard work, this is my nicest things, I want to enjoy them. So Hashem, take some leftovers. I recognize karbanos are important, and I want to recognize Hashem in some way. So, here you go. That's what Cain did. Aval Hevel hevi davar chashiv kodem shenenemhen. But Hevel gave bechoros sono. Bechoros are the firstborns. So he gave to Hashem something very chashiv, significant. And not only that, is before he himself benefited from it. I mean, that's the opposite of leftovers. Right, Cain said it's about me first, and Hashem, you're second. Hevel said, no, Hashem, take my bechoros, take my firstborns, and then I'll enjoy them. Which, you know, we have halachas in Eretz Yisrael in particular, that really all the first do go to Hashem. Whether it be, you know, bikurim, the first fruits, bechoros, the first animals, Truma, you have, before you eat your crops, you have to take off Truma, you have to take off Meiser. Everything goes first to Hashem. Rish Zagez, the first shearings of the sheep go to Hashem. You know, you have Pidyon HaBen, you have Pidyon Peter Chamer. Everything that comes out first is Kadosh for us. Now, we don't enjoy of this world until we recognize Hashem. That's the way the Torah tells us to do it. Kayin missed that idea, and he enjoyed himself first, and then gave to Hashem second. And that was his big problem. So Hevel brought this chush of sheep, and he brought it before he himself enjoyed it. Lefisha brought Kilkoi, now the Chizkuni says a very interesting line, since this destruction happened through these two karbanos, meaning the murder of Hevel, because of this, Hashem commanded about shatnas. It's a very interesting thing. You mentioned this to me last week, I think, right? Interesting thing is that Hevel brought sheep, wool, and Kayim brought flax, which is where linen comes from. So linen and wool caused the very first murder. Linen and wool were the subject of the very first conflict in this world, the very first two human beings fighting. So therefore, it became kind of taboo, we'll call it. And therefore, we have shatnez now that we don't wear wool and linen together. We don't want to remember Kain and Hevel. I'm sure there's a lot deeper meanings to it, but that's the way that the Chizkuni says it. Very interesting thing. So there's a new meaning behind shatnez. So I never knew it either, so I saw this. Right?
That's where I heard it. He says the only person that could wear it is the Kohen Gadol, because he is an epitome of
Shalom.
Shalom, and he's allowed to wear it, and he's supposed to wear it to show it, but no one else can.
Aaron is a Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. So Kohanim are people who pursue peace, right? Anyway, speaking of, I forgot to mention we were going to do this year Lui Nishmas, my mother-in-law's father. I call his a Kohen, so I'm remembering Kohen now. Shalom Moshe Michal Kohen. So, his yahrzeit today. So, also a person, a very, very peaceful person, you know, had that trait of Shalom. So that's the idea of the shatnez, that Semer Pishtim Yachdav, that because these karbanos created conflict, and for us conflict is so, you know, it's so terrible, we don't want to wear the shatnez because we can't remember this conflict. So that's the Chizkuni. I'm going to skip to number 22. Maybe we'll do this, I'll speak this one outside. I don't think we should read it inside. But Rabbeinu Chai also adds in one more point. He says that this entire pasuk, when it says that Kayin brought mi pri hadama, so he says he should have brought bikurim. Right? If we're trying to figure out the best, like we said, the best things for Hashem would be your first fruits. But yet, he didn't. So Rabbeinu Chai says explicitly, yagid akasu prisuso v'tsaros eno. The Torah is stressing, you know, Kayin's stinginess and his pettiness. Ka'ish ra'ayim. He's somebody who had an evil eye. He was, you know, he looked askance to everything else, very stingy and very, very selfish. That's, again, the same theme seems to keep coming up about Kayin. So let's look at number 23 now. It moves on to kind of discuss their fate, meaning that the karbanos they brought kind of fit their essence. And the punishment they get also fits the essence. So we're going to Rabbeinu Chai is going to explain to us how everything kind of fits together now. So let's put it back in the context. You know, Hevel was somebody who focused on Olam Haba. He was a giver. He wanted to serve Hashem properly. For him, materialism was not the goal. So he gave of his best flocks. I'm not going to enjoy without giving to Hashem first. That was Hevel. Kayin said, you know, it's all about me, my possessions. I'm stingy. I'm materialistic. Olam Hazeh is the focus, not Olam Haba, and therefore I'll give the leftovers to Hashem when I'm done. So that's who they were. So Rabbeinu Bechaya says, number 23, so Hevel was somebody who was humble, so he also gave sheep as a karban, because sheep are known to be humble. Sheep signify for us the idea of humility, you know, like we say, like going to the you go like sheep to the slaughter. They just follow along. You know, they do as they're told. You know, they don't stand up and fight. They're very, very docile. That's why, unfortunately, we describe Klal Yisrael as katzon letevach yuval. That's the phrase we use. But sheep are known to be very, very humble animals and very, very peaceful animals. Valkin davak bo ratzon Hashem yisbarach. So Hashem loves humility, as we know, and therefore Hashem desired Hevel. Hevel was humble. He brought humble karbanos, and Hashem desired his karban. This is why it says Hashem turned towards Hevel and his mincha. I just want to add in one other point, which I didn't say before. Now, you do see that Kayin initiated the karbanos. It sounds like Hevel kind of followed along. Right? Kayin brought the first karban. Hevel said, good idea. V'gam Hevel hev minchasa, also Hevel brought a karban. So you might think, oh, Kayin should get points for being the initiator. So, which technically he could have, but when you initiate something, but you don't put yourself into it, you know, Hashem said, it's nice that you thought of karbanos, but you didn't really achieve the purpose of a karban. You didn't give anything to me. You didn't give up on yourself. We say, we translate karban as a sacrifice. What did you sacrifice? Your leftovers? What kind of sacrifice is that?
So is it better not to give the korban if not going to give a good one? I mean, do you get...
Technically it is. I mean, if your korban's good, if you have a chiyuv and a korban, and you're following the halacha, then you brought a korban. But technically, I mean, if you look at the... We read in Shabbos Chazon, the first parak of Yeshaya. So Hashem screams at Klal Yisrael, then what are you doing in my Beis HaMikdash? Your korbanos, they disgust me. Because they were brought without any kavana, without any sincerity. So Hashem would rather you not bring any karban than bring an insincere, you know, lousy karban. What are you giving to Hashem by doing that?
And that's very different from doing a mitzvah, because there are different levels of a mitzvah.
Right. You know? Yeah. Right. I mean, a karban, you know, especially an optional karban, you know, don't do many favors. Like, if you want to do the favor well, then you could do it. But, you know, a favor which is only half done is a liability. It's not a favor anymore. You know, if someone's a chayiv to bring a karban, let's say like a chiv chatas, so as long as you fulfill the halacha minimally, you've done your mitzvah. But certainly any voluntary karban, Hashem says, "Lamali rov zivchechem," is the pasuk. Why do you need all your karbanos for? You know, your heart's not there, your sincerity's not there. I'm not interested. That's a refrain you find throughout Navi when clients are doing the wrong thing. So I think the answer is, even though he took the initiative, it's not worth it if he's not going to do it right. So you see, sometimes even though you might say that, you know, he started it and I followed, but if the follower does it right and the initiator doesn't do it right, so you do give credit to the follower. You know, that's, you do see from this. It's interesting. So that was the Kayin. That was Hevel. V'esem chazor shel Kayin pri adama. The Kayin, again, as we said, brought the lousy produce. Ke'ov kiyanei ha'olam hazeh. He loved this world. Avodas ha'guf she'em bo kayama. And he loved serving his own body that's not eternal. And he was pulled after physical desires. Hashem didn't desire Kayin. For Shikasav, Kayin Mechasal, Shalaspit says that Hashem didn't turn towards Kayin or his offering. So now he explains, you know, how they got the proper rewards for what they did. Hamahabil, meaning Hevel, the one who saw this world as meaningless, he was killed. So we think being killed is a terrible thing, which it is, but Hevel ended up where he was working towards getting. Hevel ended up in Olam Haba. Right? Hevel was killed. He was taken out of the world, which he himself wasn't so interested in the first place. He didn't care about the world. So the fact that he got killed, again, murder is a tragedy, obviously. But at least in terms of the Hashkacha, which is here, Hevel said, this world to me is meaningless. My focus is in Olam Haba. So Hashem took him to Olam Haba. He didn't make this world important. So Kayin, though, who loved this world, Niskal, who's cursed, he says, you love this world, Kayin? So you wander the earth the rest of your life. He became a wanderer. He wasn't allowed to stay in one place. And it's the same, it's Mida Kegamida. We know that when you love money, money never satiates you. This is a klal, it's a pasuk, and it's a klal we understand the world in general. People have billions of dollars, and they're still looking for more. And you wonder, like, can you even spend all that money in a lifetime? Like, what are you going to do with that? And the answer is, when you have this chemdas mamon, you have this lust for money, it's never satiated. So we tell Kayin, number one, you love this world so much, so you'll wander the world the rest of your life. Go enjoy the world. You can't settle in one spot. And you know that, you know, lovers of money never are satiated with money. So therefore, holech metalto makamak, you're going to have to wander from place to place, and you'll never feel settled. Because lovers of money will never feel settled in life, because you always need more and more and more. It's all about your possessions, then there's no limit to that. You just keep looking. I need a bigger house, a bigger car, nicer clothing, better jewelry. It's more and more and more and more and more. So you're not a settled person. So you'll wander beyond them. You'll go around to the seas, the deserts, where the animals and the bandits are. Vein lemanucha. You'll never have any rest, afil sha'achas, even for a moment in this world. Aval kol yom av machovim. All your days will be in pain. Like the pasuk says, when you work hard, your sleep is very sweet. But it says, but somebody who's very, very wealthy, his possessions don't let him sleep. He's so worried, Marbe Machasna Radaiga, you're so worried about your possessions, you can't sleep at night. What's happening with that stock and that field and my home over there? You have so much on your mind, you can't find any menucha. So when you're working hard and you have what you need, then you feel settled, your sleep is sweet at night, and you feel good. When you have too much, so then you're just worried about it all, and you don't have anything. So Cain ended up living the life of somebody who loves money, which means you're never going to feel settled, and you're going to wander, and you're going to be looking your entire life to settle down. And Hevel, again, as tragic as it was, since in this world to him meant nothing, so he's having his milchut olam haba Hevel, and that's where he gets to be. So Shlomo HaMelech hinted to all this in Koheles, the Sefer Koheles. This is what it says in Koheles. Tarti belibi limshoch b'yanis besari. So Koheles, the theme is that, you know, he explored the entire world, the physical world. He says, I explored with my heart to go after wine. I did a lot of great things. I built houses. I got slaves, ushvachos, and maidservants. I gained silver. I gained gold. I mean, Shlomo HaMelech was the king. He was wealthy. He had it at his fingertips. All of this world, anything Olam Hazeh, he could take in. He could enjoy. So Shlomo explored all possessions of this world, vasagoso, and attained them, and that corresponded to Cain. And then he recognized that everything was meaningless. It goes back to the dirt at the end. And this is why, so Shlomo HaMelech says everything of this world eventually goes back into the dust and doesn't have any eternal meaning. And that's what Cain was. He was Oved Adama. He was somebody who served the ground. That was Cain. And then Shlomo says, after he mentions his wealth, B'chol Kanyan Olam Hizker Acharav V'Penisi Ani B'chol Ma'asai Shasu Yadai V'Amal Shamalti Lasos. I looked at everything I did and all I accomplished. He had called Hevel, Rus Ruch, and everything's Hevel. So that word Hevel is the word of Koheles, as we mentioned last week. And Koheles is saying, because everything of this world eventually is gone. It's temporary. It has no meaning in and of itself. Horatius Oro, Indian Kayim, the Hevel. So we see that Shlomo is actually alluding to the whole story of Cain and Hevel in Koheles. That's what Koheles is all about. It's about this struggle. Hanir Mas Bo Havai V'Hefsid, which, you know, both existence and loss are all hinted to in Koheles. And it's fascinating because these are the first two human beings born in this world after Adam and Chava, because it shows you this is a key struggle that we all have. Now, where is our focus going to be? Is it here or is it in Olam Haba? What do we value? Is it possessions or is it mitzvos? That is the struggle of Kayin and Hevel. And we go through that within ourselves all the time. We have our Kayin parts and our Hevel parts. You know, and we have to know which one's going to be win out over the other one. At the very end, Shlomo HaMelech concludes his sefer with Yiras Hashem, Shu Iker HaTorah. I mean, Sof Devar Kol Nishma, end of Koheles. At the end, you know what we know. As Alkim Yara, Yisafir Hashem, Kizikol Adam. By mitzvos connected Shes. He says some mitzvos actually correspond to Shes. There's the next son of Adam and Chava was Shes. He was the after Kain and Hevel are done. Shes is born, and really the world extends from Shes, not from Kain and Hevel. Hevel was killed. Cain's offspring went 7 more generations and they were killed out. And then Shes becomes the father of the world as we have it. So Shes corresponds to Torah mitzvos. She'ikar habanim shimenu hushtas olam. Because the word Shes refers to foundation. We know that Evan Shesia is the foundation stone. Shes is the Lashon of foundation. Hushtas olam. The world is founded on Shes. He's the bedrock of this world. And he corresponds to Torah mitzvos, Yiras Hashem. So it makes a lot of sense. The first three people born should have in their names these deep meanings. So you have the one who Olam Hazeh is what's all about. You have the one who Olam Haba is all about. And you have the one who says, well, it's really about mitzvos, which are kind of using Olam Hazeh to bring it to Olam Haba. And the Shes is that one who kind of makes that link. And he's the father of the entire planet as we know it today. That Shes. So that's it. That's the end of that piece. So this next piece is longer. So maybe we'll stop it there and we'll do it next week. So I don't want to go too much over. That's good. I think we need a lot tonight. So.